Coming up here on 740 on the Mighty 690 as we go throughout a Friday edition of the program. And since it is a Friday, means we have a legislative update for you. And joining us in studio, we have State Senator Virgil Peck. How you doing, sir?
Good morning. I'm doing just great, James. Hey, I was listening to KGGF earlier, and you were talking about a weather forecast, and you used the S word.
I know.
And I thought, this is October. How in the world could James be saying that there's potential for snow?
I think it's really, really unlikely, but it's probably, you know, Sunday night into Monday is where we could actually have a few flakes flying, so.
Yeah, I checked out the radar because I was wondering when is it going to get here, and you were right when you said that there's a line over in Chautauqua County of moisture, and that's the leading front, according to the Channel 6 guy. But it's going to dampen our efforts tomorrow, our parade participation tomorrow at Niwala. I'll be there, but it looks like I'm going to have a jacket on.
Yeah, you might, because already on the back half of this cold front, Wichita's down to 45.
45, yeah.
And we're sitting at 70 right now.
At 70.
Yep. Almost 72, actually.
Well, that was what my car thermometer said, was 72.
Yeah.
And but anyway, so, we'll talk about a little bit of legislative things, but the weather's kind of sort of forefront in everyone's mind today.
Sure. Yep, it's a changing.
It's a changing, absolutely.
All right. Well, I know you wanted to talk more a little on the federal level, but it does apply to lots of folks out there in some Social Security topics here.
Absolutely. The federal government recently announced what the increase will be in Social Security benefits for 2024, and that increase will be 3.2%. Now, a lot of, I'm going to guess most listeners are unaware of how the determination is made on what the increase will be. It's interesting to me, and it's in federal guidelines and the Social Security guidelines. Whatever the inflation rate is for an average of July, August, and September for 3 months out of the year, whatever the average inflation rate is for those 3 months is what the increase will be in Social Security benefits. Interestingly, the inflation rate in September was 3.7%. So September itself was higher than what the increase is going to be for Social Security recipients. And as we know, early in the year, inflation was a whole lot higher. So it's not a perfect formula at all. But I found it interesting that 3.2% is what the increase is going to be. So for easy figuring, $1,000, that means an extra $32. I'm not on Social Security, James. You're a long ways from that. But I've been told by many recipients of Social Security that a lot of times the Medicare increase in premium eats up most of the inflationary increase. But I just found it interesting that we're talking 3 months. You would think that it would be averaged over a longer period of time because inflation can go much higher certain months than others. But 3%, and something along this line, again, we're at the federal government level, but I was amazed. Your federal government, my federal government, everyone's federal government, borrows more than $47,000 every second. So in our time here today, it's going to amount to many hundreds of thousands of dollars of borrowing by the federal government.
And where's that coming from?
That is coming a lot from foreign countries, a lot of its adversaries. But that's $4 billion a day or $28.5 billion every week that the federal government is borrowing. So when people talk about a federal government shutdown, maybe it wouldn't necessarily be all bad. Yeah, there would be some pain, but federal government shutdown, by the way, would not hinder Social Security benefits, would not hinder a lot of things. Now, it would hinder military pay, which is a downside. But, James, when our government is borrowing that kind of money every second of every day, it's not a good thing for America. But I'm a state legislator, can't impact that, but I just found it interesting, so I thought I'd mention it on the air.
So switching gears just a little bit back to Kansas, I know that we've talked on the program before about Kansas Highway Patrol recruiting, and I know you have a little bit of a update on that.
There is. The Kansas Highway Patrol has had some turmoil within their leadership, and that has in turn equated into low recruitment. And the reason that happens is current troopers are the main ones who recruit future troopers, because they will tell their buddies and people they know that they ought to be part of the Kansas Highway Patrol. Well, the good news is it looks like we have hopefully remedied that, turned a corner, and we will be having more troopers on the highways. Now, this is one of those things you got mixed feelings, James. I realize that listeners say, well, I don't really like to see a highway patrolman when I'm driving. Well, it just makes you make certain that you abide by the law and no one likes to see the flashing lights. No. However,
yeah. I think I know where you're going.
You probably know where I'm going. If there's an accident or if there is some issue with a highway or animals on the highway, all kinds of issues, we want a trooper there immediately.
Yes.
And so when we don't have adequate troopers, it hinders the good things that they do, which they do a lot of good things. But the academy, the Kansas Highway Patrol Academy, is on track to graduate 30 to 32 troopers this year, which is more than double what it was in 2022. There were only 15 graduates in 2022. Backing up a couple years, in 2021, there were only 5. So we're looking at 30 this year, which is 6 times what we had in 2021. And in 2020, there were only 7. So when you add 2020, 21, and 22 all together, it is still less than what we're going to graduate or projected to graduate this year. So that's good news, I believe, because we do definitely, like I say, want troopers on the highways to make certain our highways are safe and they are there when we need them for many issues that can come up.
Now, we know that the KHP divides the state into several different regions. Now, in Southeast Kansas, are they kind of based out of one particular city, or do you know how that actually kind of works for, you know, where they're, because, you know, they're always just driving around a lot of the time. That's the point.
They cover a lot of miles. Chanute is sort of, if you will, the headquarters, but we do have troopers that are based locally as far as where they live, but Chanute is sort of the Kansas Highway Patrol headquarters for this particular region. And then there are other, of course, different locations across the state. But to answer your question.
Okay, very good. Well, another kind of interesting note on the state news side of things. So there's a bison auction coming up.
What a bison auction? What would that be?
Give me a home where the buffalo roam and the...
There we go. Absolutely. The Kansas Department of Wildlife and Parks is inviting the public, which, James, if you want to go buy a bison and tie it to your motorhome,
yeah,
wouldn't work very well.
It would not work very well,
your,
yeah.
Your motorhome would not be where it is currently.
No.
But on November the 1st, which is next Wednesday, the Department of Wildlife and Parks is hosting... They're going to have a surplus bison auction at the Maxwell Wildlife Refuge. Now, the Maxwell Wildlife Refuge is located in Canton, Kansas, which is McPherson County. So it's west of here a ways, but it's not that far away if someone's really needing or wanting to buy a bison. But this wildlife refuge has about 200 bison currently. They also have some elk. Now, my understanding is they're not going to be auctioning any elk, but they will have 62 bison up for auction next week. They're going to have calves, they'll have yearlings, and they will have a few adult bison that they're going to auction off.
Are there going to be some cowboys here to round these up?
I have wondered how do you do that, because bison they're a wild animal.
Yeah.
But of course, when they're on a refuge, they're a little tamer, they're a little more used to people. So I suppose I'm sure they've got a method of plan on how they're going to load those up for individuals. I don't know. I don't have the knowledge or expertise at all how to care for a bison. It looks like it would be the same as caring for cattle.
Yeah.
But they are.
I just want to stay a little further away.
Well, it seems like it, but they can also be, it seems like, fairly docile, fairly
okay.
Tame.
Mm-hmm.
So it just depends. Now, if you get a bull, that can be a challenge, particularly during breeding season, whether it's with the bison or elk, deer, anything. The males can get rather aggressive at that time, so you want to avoid those. But I found it interesting that we actually have a surplus of bison. And, yeah, you started singing for us there,
yep.
the state song, Home on the Range, but where the buffalo roam. So if a person has a desire to go buy some bison, a bison or some bison, got an opportunity. Have no idea what the prices will be, so we'll find out. But that's a little unusual for a state to have an auction for bison.
Sure. Well, hey, wild it's hard animals. To beat a bison burger. You know, those are good.
They're pretty good. Yeah. Yep. So I don't. I'm going to guess that's what's going to happen to several of these.
Sure.
They will be butchered.
Yep.
But they're going to have to be certainly yearlings or older.
Yep, yep. All right, well, switching kind of as we zoom in a little bit closer here to Coffeyville, you know, we did have the white powder incident here earlier this year, and you actually had some statistics shared with you on the actual cost of that whole incident.
That was certainly an unfortunate thing that happened to Republican legislators in the state of Kansas. And then there were some, if you will, others that mimicked what happened in Kansas and other states, but it certainly precipitated here in Kansas. And when I was in Topeka for the Joint Committee on Kansas Security, which is basically the Intelligence Committee, they talk about a lot of things that I can't talk about on the air, but several things they did talk about in open session. The KBI and the state fire marshal appeared before the committee, and each agency told what it cost them for the white powder. And this was in June, so it's been several months ago, that I think Ron Bryce was probably the first legislator to receive a letter, because he was on KGGF that morning, at Friday morning, and he went to the post office just a block from here and got his mail, and whoops, there's something in this that doesn't appear to be a normal item you received in the mail, and it was a white powder. But the state fire marshal's office spent $170,000 in response to the letters. The Kansas Bureau of Investigation, $575,000. So when you combine those two, it costs Kansas taxpayers through the KBI and state fire marshal $745,000 to respond to those suspicious white letter or white powder letters in June.
Well, and does that even account for the local responses all over the place, where you have these local fire departments, you know, coming out and checking it out? I mean, I don't know if that was actually, you know, a hazmat response or what that was, but I mean, you had all the time of all your local agencies too dealing with this.
You're absolutely correct. But it does not. I know I got my letter. I stopped by the Caney Police Department, so it doesn't account for any time that the Caney PD invested in my letter and other law enforcement agencies across the state, because I know that the Montgomery County Sheriff's Office showed up in Caney. Sheriff Ron Wade was there, which I appreciated seeing Sheriff Wade, but he showed up as well as the KBI showed up in Caney that day. So good question. It does not include. Now, here in Coffeyville is one of the hazmat locations, and that would be under the purview of the state fire marshal's office. So that would be accounted for in these numbers. But they told us that they used pretty much all of their personnel. 75%, 3 out of 4 of the forensic personnel became involved in this issue. And they invested, the KBI invested 96 hours in this endeavor. And it's one of those things where, fortunately for all of us, it turned out to be a non-threatening material. It wasn't anthrax, it wasn't smallpox, it wasn't any other airborne contaminant. It was basically flour, wheat flour, rice flour, some bran. There was a little bit of bug, powder for elimination of pest bugs, but not enough that it was going to cause anybody any damage. But these letters, just as a reminder, went to about 100 Republican elected officials, state legislators, as well as our Attorney General's office. Most of them came to our home address. We've got one senator in Emporia. He got one at his home address and at his business. He's a car dealer. So that accounted for two of those letters. But the return address was churches. So someone, James, invested a lot of energy to come up with an address for a church in Havana, Kansas, because there's just not a lot of them in Havana. But Lone Cherry Southern Baptist Church was the address they used. And then the names on the return address are transgender activists. And some of these transgender activists are deceased, and some of them are still living, but that was the name that they used. And then the address. So whoever sent it out, and by the way, the KBI, without getting into details, it looks like they're probably going to solve who and where these all originated from, and then the person or persons will face the consequences. So it's not sadly, it's not even over yet. There's still some money being expended, but it's all taxpayer money. But we really appreciate our local law enforcement and the state KBI for their efforts. But it was just a frustrating thing that happened.
Sure. I mean, yeah, Kansas making the national news from some unfortunate reasons. And, yeah, like you said, it's not over. So
now, we like making the national news when it comes to our athletic teams or job creation. But, yeah, this was not a positive thing. But it wasn't really specifically Kansas, something Kansas did. But it only takes one or two people to put a black mark on our entire state.
That's right. So as we have a couple more minutes left here, what else do you want to hit while we have some time here, Virgil?
Well, we've got our Senate President Ty Masterson and Speaker of the House Dan Hawkins have been traveling the state on the Prosperity Express tour. And what President Masterson and Speaker Hawkins are doing, they are visiting with local citizens. They were in Pittsburgh here in southeast Kansas. I went over there. They've been to many locations across the state, and they're talking about taxes and sort of laying out what happened. Everyone will remember that last session, this year, 2023, Senate Bill 169 was vetoed by the governor, which would have really been a good thing for every Kansas citizen. It amazes me, James, that people say, well, that was a bill for the rich. No, it wasn't for the rich. It was for every single person who pays taxes in the state of Kansas. Would have reduced their property taxes, would have reduced their income taxes, but the governor vetoed it. We fell one vote in the Senate short of overriding the veto, so that did not happen. But President Masterson, Speaker Hawkins are traveling the state, and they are communicating that they are going to hit the ground running the very first month of the 2024 session. There will be tax legislation that will be introduced. Speaker Hawkins said that the House, and apparently Speaker Hawkins, President Masterson have had discussions, the House will be taking the lead on this issue. And they will be developing a tax plan. He said he hopes to get it passed during the very first month. Now, that's pretty ambitious. It can be done. I hope they do. As Vice President of the Senate Tax Committee, I'm anxious to get to work. Let's get on this. Let's cut taxes for Kansas citizens. As a reminder, our rainy day fund, which we've only had for a very short time, about 4 years, has $1.6 billion in it. So we've got money set aside in a savings account. And then the ending balance in our checking account, for easy figuring, is somewhere between $3 and $4 billion. So we've got between $4 and $5 billion in round numbers of taxpayer money in excess of what's needed. And James, it's not that the legislature has really held the line on spending. Spending has continued to go up. It has gone up every year. Even when people talk about the time when Sam Brownback was our governor, spending went up. People talk about the cuts that were made. No, spending went up. Spending has always increased in Kansas government. I think it's time we stop increased spending. We talked about the federal government. Easy to talk about the federal government. State government needs to control this spending as well as local units of government. But we'll see what we can accomplish as far as some tax relief for Kansas citizens. And one thing that was mentioned, I'll just mention briefly, in the Joint Committee on Kansas Security, the KBI gave us some numbers as it relates to fentanyl. James, fentanyl, and I know that Representative Bryce has talked about this. Many legislators have talked about fentanyl. Fentanyl is an extremely dangerous drug. I would warn everyone to avoid fentanyl. If you're a parent, talk to your children about drug use, about the dangers of fentanyl. They gave us a picture, which I showed you a little bit earlier, a picture of a penny. If people are watching on Facebook, they can see the picture of the penny. And there's just a little bit of dust beside the penny in the picture. And that is a lethal dose of fentanyl.
I mean, it's for everyone on the radio, it's about a quarter size maybe of Abraham Lincoln's head. I mean, it's just even probably smaller than that. It's just crazy.
It's just small. And fentanyl in the drugs that are out there is inconsistent. Some drugs that users think has fentanyl has none, zero, and then others has lethal doses in it. I was curious, so I asked, why in the world would anyone use fentanyl? What the KBI told us, fentanyl is supposed to extend or lengthen the high from using drugs, but it's a dangerous thing, so I would say avoid it. And it's the amount of fentanyl that's coming into our country comes from China through our open borders on the south. Whole nother topic we could spend a lot of time, but we're up against the clock.
Sure. Well, that's some little scary stuff, but hey, we did cover a lot of ground here. I do appreciate the update, Senator Virgil Peck. And if folks need to get a hold of you, constituents, all that sort of thing, what's the best way to do that?
There are a couple ways. One is through email, virgil@virgil4senate.com. So virgil@virgil4senate.com or cell phone 620-330-3839.
All righty. And we got news coming up here on the Mighty 690.